And I personally guarantee that you will never set foot on a dock again. Not in America, not in Europe, not in the Indies.
Nicholas felt the cold sweat collect along his spine, and tried to tamp down his desperate longing. He could picture being on the other side of this so clearly, and was struck by the profound power of finally being in the position to free the family's slaves, of finally being granted reparations. This offer would open the door to nearly everything he desired. Money was power. He could demand respect, and spite those who would not freely give it. But he could not help seeing Julian's face. He could not banish the searing agony of that moment as it played out again behind his eyes. Yet again, he was being cast in the role of servant, put in a position to fail. Yet again, he owed something to someone who... Julian's face was gone, replaced by Etta's, pale with terror. The image seared his heart. Not again. He could not survive it.
"I realize, of course, that you are not a blank slate," the old man continued. "You will need to ingratiate yourself to her, earn her trust wholly, so she confides in you about the location of the astrolabe once she has ascertained its location. If you are separated from her, you will return to me immediately, and we will proceed accordingly."
"And leave her alone, to be lost, harmed, or taken, as she continued on without him in the meantime." The thought pricked his pride, stoked his fear. Nicholas had promised her protection, vowed to get her away from Ironwood should the need arise. There was no question now that her life was in danger. But perhaps he could reconcile his hopes with that promise. Keeping Etta safe meant not only shielding her from harm, but also preventing her from crossing Ironwood. Once they found the blasted thing, he could be the one to ensure the old man kept his vow. Nicholas could deliver her back to the passage in Nassau, wherever it might be. What else was there to do? Give up the future within his reach for someone who, in time, would only be a memory? He had lived nearly his whole life for others. Wasn't it time to live for himself, secure his future? He owed it to himself. What's more, he owed it to Julian to finish what they'd begun, so his death wouldn't be for nothing. "I am the one who truly owes a debt to them, not her." He'd stolen Julian. He could give the old man this, and then he'd never need to see his wicked face again. Cyrus watched him carefully.
"I see the indecision on your face," he continued. "If it makes the offer more palatable, I will lift the ban on your traveling. Your exile here in your natural time will end. You will be free to go wherever, whenever you like."
Nicholas recoiled instinctively, but caught himself.
"My exile is payment for the debt I owe on Julian's life. I have no desire to return to traveling."
It was the truth, and it made him uneasy that the man had even offered. Ironwood had raged when he'd returned, weak and wounded without Julian, and he'd understood his fury, felt, even now, that he deserved it. Not for depriving the man of his last direct heir, but for depriving the world of the only decent soul in the family. Now all would be forgiven. As if it were nothing. As if Julian were nothing. Nicholas had all but toasted the news that the man who had fathered him had drowned before Cyrus could come to find him. But he'd languished for years now over Julian's death, battering himself at every turn. He tortured himself with that one question. Why travel at all if nothing could be changed? Why travel if he could not save Julian? If he could not so much as warn him not to go down that path, to stay away from Ironwood? The futility was devastating, and always would be. Nicholas had worked hard to earn back the trust of Chase and Hall, after abandoning them for false promises and hollow revelations. Hall had done everything in his power to dissuade him from leaving with Ironwood, and Nicholas had waved away his every concern like a fool.
"Why the 30th?" he asked again. "What is so important about that date?" "It is merely a deadline," Cyrus said. "To hold the girl accountable."
The old man never did anything without a reason. There was something important here that he was withholding, but the man's chosen currency was secrets. Nicholas wasn't sure he was willing to trade to find out what this one was.
"Say yes, Nicholas," Cyrus coaxed, holding out a hand.
Did it matter so much? Nicholas saw the future he'd built during all of these years, and it was resting in the old man's calloused palm. He only had to agree. A few words to seal that fate. Perhaps they were more alike than he'd care to admit.
"I need this in writing, a proper contract," Nicholas heard himself say.
The old man's eyes lit up.
"I've already taken care of it. There's a copy for you to keep."
The contract was waiting in his trunk, along with a ballpoint pen for signing. It had been so long since Nicholas had used one of them, the weight felt unfamiliar in his hand as he brought the metal tip to the parchment. He felt sick to his stomach reading through the terms. The old man had known he'd be weak enough to give in. Should he have put up more of a fight? Were there better terms to be had?
"Good man," Cyrus said, taking one copy and folding it neatly into thirds, and held out his hand.
Nicholas gave it a brief, firm shake, and felt the burn of it as if he'd taken the devil's hand, still warm from the fires of hell. Cyrus continued,
"You'll leave tomorrow with the girl, just as soon as she has deciphered the next clue."
Nicholas nodded, a stone lodged in his throat. "Forgive me, Mother," he thought, taking his leave as quickly as possible. "I will do what I must." He was not doing this to take up the Ironwood name, to stay within a family that had never wanted him in the first place. He was not doing this to take up the life of a traveler again, or to see beyond the horizon of his natural years. He was not doing this for a girl who would never truly belong to him. He was doing this for his future, for Julian's memory. He would master his feelings. He would see this arrangement through, and he would close this chapter once and for all. Nicholas walked. For miles, heading nowhere in particular, he walked for what felt like hours, trying to force his legs to grow reacquainted with the steadiness of land. He carried only his freedom papers in his coat pocket, and the money Ironwood's men had provided for bringing Sophia and Etta to New York, neither of which he was foolish enough to leave behind at the tavern. He passed the time under an unusually cloudless sky, as night edged into the earliest morning hours, and the world slowly began to lighten around him. And when those thoughts wove into a long, dangerous rumination on the color of Etta's eyes in comparison to that same faint blue, he turned his mind back to another unwelcome task, mentally composing his letter to Chase. "Dear friend, you were right. I'll be very late." Seemed too short, and would give his friend far too much to crow about. But, "I must venture through time with the Pirate Queen," would be met with confusion and fear for Nicholas's mind. "I've further business to attend to here in New York. I'll be in New London by the start of November." That was better. He felt a pang at the thought of the others sailing without him. "But you'll be sailing on your own ship soon enough," he thought. What would Hall think of him, knowing he'd thrown in his lot with Ironwood again? Nicholas couldn't imagine better business partners than Chase and Hall. Perhaps they would come to see reason once they took a look at the plantation's ledgers. The road rose and fell beneath him, riddled with puddles of stale, festering water and sun-roasted mounds of animal droppings, as he passed fields of crops and country homes. It remained empty as he turned back in the direction of the Dove and the Royal Artillery Park. He knew a hanging would take place within hours. A spy had been caught behind enemy lines, and this was the natural outcome. It was a testament to how rattled he was by Ironwood that he felt the old, foolish guilt come creeping into his heart. A man was set to die, and none of them had done a thing to stop it. If he knew them at all, both Cyrus and Sophia would take in the execution as spectators, and add it to the tally of noteworthy events they'd witnessed. If Nicholas had not looked up from the mud, he might have missed the distant, dark streak that crossed the road as it blazed a path toward the Royal Artillery Park. A swirl of sapphire fabric, long gold hair braided like a rope down her back. He took off at a run, cursing. Veering off the road, he followed the tracks that led into a cluster of nearby trees, behind what must have been the officers' quarters. The air smelled of wet animals, gunpowder, men, all evidence of the camp nearby.
"Miss Spencer," he hissed into the silence.
The river rose up before him, a glimmering line of blue waiting to be lit by the sun. Where had she gone? Had it been a trick of the mind? No, He found the trail of footprints again. Ironwood had been right after all. Etta was attempting to trick him, in this case by leaving under the cover of night without his knowledge. No doubt in possession of the actual meaning of her mother's letter as well. As she pushed forward, a crackle of power snapped against his skin. He knew that sensation. The passage was no longer singing in his ears, but there was a powerful hum below the quiet chatter of birds. A faint, burning hiss that reminded him of the moment after a flash of lightning appeared over the sea. Of the rare, white-blue lights that sometimes danced upon the masts and sails. The entrance to the passage was a glimmering wall ahead, just at the edge of where the land met the river. It was still rippling, as if someone had only just passed through it.
"Bloody fool,"
he breathed out, rubbing a hand over his head to force down the fear. For a moment he was at a loss as to how to proceed. There wasn't time to go back to the tavern to collect the rest of his belongings. She could fully escape, or worse, be injured or killed in the time it took him to return to the Dove and tell Ironwood what had happened. Nicholas shook his head. The old man had given him explicit instructions to gain the girl's trust and return with the astrolabe by any means, both of which seemed impossible if he were to fetch her back. She would doubt his motivations when he needed her full confidence, and he couldn't predict what punishment Ironwood might levy on her, her mother, or both, for his. He had signed Ironwood's contract, and both he and Ironwood knew the punishment for failure. Nicholas would have to trust that the old man would recognize the truth of what had likely happened when he woke in a few hours to find them both gone. Besides, in the end, all that mattered to the old man was that they returned with the astrolabe in hand. What was it that Julian had always said? Better to ask forgiveness than permission. His brother was still on his mind as he took a deep breath and walked steadily toward the passage, trying to quell his wariness as he approached. How long had it been since he'd felt a passage enclose his skin, his bones, crush the air from his lungs? Longer than a year. Long enough to force him to take a deep, steadying breath. "Come on, Nick." Julian's voice rose on the breeze at his back. "We've a journey to make." And with one last breath of his world, he stepped through, surrendering himself to the pressure and the devastating blackness as time bent around him. London, 1940. 11. Etta crashed down into awareness in a symphony of shattered glass, hearing it break a split second before she felt the shards slicing through her skin. Pain stole her breath and turned the world into sand around her. Just when she was sure she'd managed to get a grip on her surroundings, the images and sensations drained into nothingness again. Her body throbbed as she fought against unconsciousness. The lingering pressure from the passage didn't ease, not even when she threw up. Now she knew why she couldn't remember what had happened with Sophia, how she had traveled to the ship after arriving through the passage. "Don't." She clung to the word, forcing her burning eyes open. "Don't pass out." Etta was caught in between charred beams and what looked like a blown-out window frame, her body cradled in it like a doll that had been dropped from above. Carefully, she shifted, twisting until her feet touched the ground. Fabric tore, her right sleeve separated at the shoulder, and in the instant before her knees collapsed under her and the world blacked out again, an unnatural chill crept under her skin and turned her blood to ice. Her cheek struck the cement, and she felt nothing at all. It was the warmth she noted first, the gentle pressure of the touch. Her legs and back ached as they came awake, but the pain on the right side of her face was scalding, raw. The air smelled of smoke, fire, but also... Through her lashes she saw a dark head bent over her, cleaning dirt and blood away from her right hand. Nicholas's face was drawn, stricken as he worked, and Etta's throat tightened as he carefully brought her hand up to his mouth, as if to kiss it, his warm breath fanning over her skin. Instead, he shook his head and carefully set her hand down to rest on her stomach. In spite of the pain rattling around inside of her, the lingering pulse of the nearby passage, Etta let herself feel a pang of regret. And then she remembered. Panicked, Etta tried moving her legs, shifting to get them under her. If he was here, then she hadn't gotten away. Ironwood would know she tried to slip out of their deal, and her mom. He's going to kill her. She shouldn't have left. She should have been more careful. What was the point of any of this if Cyrus turned around and killed her mom while Etta was centuries and continents away from protecting her? I had to take the risk. I had to get ahead of him, to beat his deadline. But when she closed her eyes, her mind was already imagining it, already seeing her mother's lifeless eyes staring back at her. This was better. Leaving without his permission had to be safer for her mother than waiting and ultimately running out of time. The air seemed to tick around her, counting down.
"Miss Spencer," Nicholas said, his voice loud in her ears. "Can you hear me?"
Etta forced her eyes open all the way, taking in his face, the remnants of a broken ceiling and the blue sky beyond. Unsure of what to say, she tried. "Hi." The relief in his face flashed irritation.
"Do you realize you could have been killed, or worse? What the devil were you thinking? Or were you not thinking at all?"
Irritation burned through Etta.
"Mind your own business.
Need to move. Need to find it. Need to get to Mom." But her legs were still not cooperating.
"I ought to throttle you for this," he continued. "Is anything hurting other than your cheek and hand? I've cleaned your cuts as best I could."
She shook her head. Aside from those things, she was fine. Mostly.
"Dizzy."
He sucked in a sharp breath.
"That is traveler sickness. It'll ease with every passage. For now, I'm afraid you'll have to bear it."
Horrible.
Etta tried to get her hands beneath her, to push, so she was at least sitting up. Aside from the anger she felt radiating off him, Nicholas seemed completely unaffected. She twisted away from his hands as he reached out to help her, and scooted back through the dust and debris until her back hit a wall. A cold expression slid over his face, and she was suddenly pinned by guilt. If it were possible, Etta felt worse than before.
"You were attempting to run," he said, stating the obvious. "Incredibly foolish. Do you honestly believe Ironwood's reach is limited to the 18th century? If nothing else, have a care for your mother. If he sees you crossing him this way, he will kill her."
"I left a note with Sophia, saying I needed to leave now because of the deadline."
Etta shook her head. She'd written it by moonlight, and waited only long enough to be sure the man on guard outside their door was asleep.
"I can't run out of time.
And I don't necessarily want Ironwood to be able to follow me."
"You don't understand."
She'd known it was a risk, that she was maybe naively banking on the chance that Ironwood would not punish her mother if she left without his permission in order to, as she'd written in the note, make your deadline. Etta had a feeling the old man had ways of tracking her progress across time. She needed a little bit of a head start to find her footing and avoid anyone tailing her to report back on her movements, which passages she'd used. Unfortunately, she hadn't factored in traveler's sickness. Or Nicholas.
"Explain it to me," he said, his voice a harsh, deadly quiet. "Explain to me why you'd risk her life, why you'd risk your life, leaving without any supplies or preparation. I didn't take you for an idiot."
She clenched her jaw, glaring back at him. Her arm was filled with pins and needles as the blood rushed to it, but she lifted it all the same, searching the ground for the bag of things she'd borrowed from the trunk in Sophia's room. It looked like they were in some sort of hallway, only maybe hallway wasn't the right word. The vaulted stone ceiling was broken up by shattered skylights and long hanging lanterns. There were shops inside here. She saw battered chairs, shoes that had been blown out of storefronts. The second-story windows above each gold and black store entrance looked like they had been thrown open all at once.
"There," she said, pointing to a leather bag a short distance away. "I didn't come unprepared.
What had happened here? It looked like a bomb had gone off. Everything looked damp, like the people here had only just put out an enormous fire. "Where am I?" she thought, panic gnawing holes in her core. She heard distant voices,
clipped English accents, too faint to decipher. Nicholas sorted through the bag. A pair of sewing scissors, a harmonica engraved with Sophia's initials, a small mirror, a few pieces of gold, your mother's letter, a... Etta smirked. A lady's support garment, an apple and a revolver, he finished, closing the bag again. Sophia hadn't had a truly modern support garment, but the one Etta had found in the trunk was as close to it as she was going to get. What else would I need? She asked innocently. Water, maps, a list of known passages, era-appropriate clothing, ammunition for a said revolver. Do you even know how to use the weapon? Well, he had her there. If you try to bring me back, I'll... You'll what, Miss Spencer? Nicholas said, crouching down in front of her. You'll glare at me. Etta's hand closed around a nearby shard of glass, holding it out in front of her. Nicholas's expression changed, his eyes darkened, drawn first to the makeshift weapon, then to her face. She refused to wilt under the pressure of his gaze, and stared back as defiantly as she could, with one of her cheeks swollen to twice its size. He broke first, his face softening. He sat down on a nearby piece of rubble and took out a folded handkerchief.
You've cut yourself again, pirate.
After a moment, Etta set the piece of glass down and let him hold the warm cloth against her palm, staring at the way his large hand cupped hers. Her chest grew tight as she searched for the right words.
Why didn't you tell me? He asked quietly. You made me promise not to leave without a word. You couldn't have done the same for me.
Sorry. She hadn't thought of that. The knife of guilt wedged in her stomach was gripped by fear and given another twist. I didn't want to waste another second, not when he could hurt Mom, kill her. I think Ironwood knows better than to hurt her until I come back with the astrolabe. If he did hurt her, then I'd really have nothing to lose, right? Nicholas nodded.
He has other ways of hurting you.
But not motivating me, and... Etta hesitated, unsure of whether or not to tell him the other motivation that burned inside of her. I told you about Alice. I need to finish this. Get back to her. Nicholas sat back on his heels, glancing up at what they could see of the sky. His usual move, she realized, to try to collect his thoughts, hide his expression.
Etta, you can't save her.
Of course I can, she insisted, but her heart sped up at the expression on his face. The guilt, the sympathy. I just have to travel back
and change the past, he finished. Alter the timeline.
Etta set her jaw. I don't care about that. I don't. Ironwood has been changing the past for years, and I can't even save one life.
No, Etta. Listen to me, Nicholas said quickly. What you're speaking of isn't a matter of mortality. It's an impossibility.
She pulled back against the wall, away from him, away from his words.
Didn't Sophia tell you this? You can't cross paths with yourself. You cannot exist twice in the same place, at the same time. Time itself won't allow it. You'd be bounced back out of the passage before you could move through, Nicholas said, keeping his voice low. That's why travelers keep journals, to remember the dates and years they've already been to.
Etta felt like he'd thrown a bucket of ice water over her. Her chest clenched painfully, so she wouldn't be able to use the passage to get back to that moment before Alice was shot. Never mind that. She wouldn't even be able to go to any month or year before that and warn her it would happen. All because some past version of herself was already there.
Didn't she explain that the passages connect years, not days? Nicholas pressed.
What do you mean? Etta whispered. His expression softened.
I see. So she didn't. Even if you could find another traveler to use that passage to save her, you would need to wait a year in order to do so. It's easiest to think of each year as a tiny stream, all flowing parallel to one another, all moving in one direction, even as we jump between them. We left Manhattan on the 22nd of September, 1776. We arrived here on the 22nd of September, whatever year this might be. Do you understand?
Etta nodded, unable to speak for several long moments. There has to be another way. It couldn't end like this. Alice couldn't die. Not for her. Mom will know what to do. Blank slate, she said slowly. That's what Ironwood meant when he called me that. It wasn't because I didn't know anything, but that I haven't been anywhere. The chances of me crossing paths with myself are slim, right? He nodded, touching her elbow.
You do understand, don't you?
She lifted her chin.
I understand there's always another option, another way if you look hard enough for it.
He let out a faint laugh, closing his eyes.
I thought you might say something like that.
Wait, Etta said, another thought suddenly occurring to her. Oh my God, won't Ironwood be after you for traveling? After what had happened to his half-brother, Nicholas had been banned, exiled, he'd said, and she didn't think this would go unnoticed.
My fear for you outweighs my fear of him, he said simply. And I told you, didn't I? If you left, I'd follow you.
But should you try to leave on your own, know that I will go to the ends of the earth to bring you back. The words echoed between them, unspoken. A cloud of ash filtered down from above. Without thinking, Etta reached up and brushed the flakes away from his hair. He closed his eyes, bowing his head, leaning into the touch just enough to make her hand tremble.
You know what the letter says, the one your mother wrote. And you don't trust me, he began. You see me as one of them, don't you?
No, she said quickly. It was true that he'd agreed to work for Cyrus, to bring her to New York. But he stood apart from them, didn't he? He'd been badly wronged by them, hadn't he? She didn't want to get him tangled any deeper in the family, or give them another reason to make his life miserable.
You do, he said. After everything I've told you...
Etta dropped her head back against the wall. He could take her apart with a single look, couldn't he? But she wanted to tell him this. She wanted him to understand that she wasn't just being a reckless idiot. She wanted him to be on her side. She needed what he knew about the Ironwoods, about traveling. But how mercenary did that make her, to see if he'd come with her, and then leave him to deal with the fallout?
Can I trust you? Etta asked.
Will you trust me? Nicholas gave a curt nod. She took a deep breath.
I do know how to read the letter, she admitted. And I think the old man's lying, or at least not giving us the full truth.
His lips parted, the only slip in his mask. She'd surprised him.
What brought you to that conclusion? Nicholas asked.
My mom isn't a thief, Etta said. I don't care what he says. I think this thing, the astrolabe, it belonged to the Lindens. Her family, the one that had been whittled down to her and her mother alone. They, or at least my mom, felt responsible for protecting it.
It might have truly belonged to them, Nicholas conceded after mulling this over. My understanding from Julian is that there was an astrolabe for each of the four families. Ironwood, Jacaranda, Linden, and Hemlock. But three were lost, or destroyed outright a century ago. Ironwood feels that because he is the Grand Master of all of these families, they all belong to him, regardless of the original owner.
Etta nodded, wondering what else had been stolen from her family, what heirlooms, secrets, and history had been absorbed into the Ironwood clan. Maybe her mom would be able to tell her. Maybe they could reclaim some of that together. After you somehow outsmart the old man, save your mom, save Alice, and perform at the debut next month. And this letter. She must have known something was going to happen, otherwise why write it? Etta said. Nicholas braced his arms on his knees.
Well, you can ask her once we have the astrolabe back in Ironwood's hands, and he frees her.
Etta blinked. You want to come with me? She saw a flash of sharp emotion pass quickly over his face, but couldn't decode it. He glanced away. After a moment, Nicholas scoffed.
As if I'd ever feel comfortable letting you attempt this without any kind of aid. I could see in your face that you're unhappy, but I trained for years to be able to travel. You've only just begun. It's not weakness to require help, or a protector.
I don't need a protector, Etta said. I need a partner. Nicholas's gaze had been skimming the destruction around them, over the glimmering wall of air that was the entrance to the passage. But at her words, he met her eyes. His lips parted, as if the idea had startled him.
What are the terms of this?
Didn't you travel with Julian? She wanted to ask. But Sophia had called him little more than Julian's servant, a kind of valet, and while Etta had initially taken it as the girl being cruel and dismissive, she now had the evidence right in front of her. Her heart cracked and cracked again at the role they'd thrust him into, at how he'd assumed it would be the same with her.
We watch each other's backs, she said. You call me Etta, and we don't keep secrets.
Except, of course, that she'd never give the astrolabe to Ironwood if she could help it.
And we continue our mutual disdain of Ironwood.
She grinned, even as doubt began to cloud her thoughts. What if returning it is the only way he won't punish Nicholas for this? She couldn't think about that now. It was a question for when and if they actually found the astrolabe. But accepting his help had consequences. He would be risking the old man's wrath. As if he'd leaned over and peered into her thoughts, he said quietly,
It's my choice. What I do, I decide for myself.
All right. Whatever invisible string had been tied so tightly around her heart loosened. Before we find out where we're going, do you have any idea where we are? He climbed to his knees, giving her a dry look.
I was rather distracted by you lying in a pool of your own blood.
There isn't a pool, she protested, rubbing at her swelling cheek. He reached over, as if it were the most natural thing in the world, and pulled her hand away to hold.
Don't fuss with it, he said.
He ran a feather-light finger over the scrape. She didn't breathe until he let his hand fall away.
Now you've the look of a real pirate, he told her with a small, quiet smile. But I'll need to purchase clothing and supplies. Will you be all right if I leave you here for a few moments? I won't be long, I promise.
Etta opened the bag she'd hastily packed and rooted around inside of it until her hands closed on the small velvet sack of gold. She handed it to him.
My mom might not be a thief, but I don't particularly care if I am. Seems like just payment, he agreed, weighing it in his palm. Considering what they've done to you.
He set off into the wreckage of stone and storefronts around them. Etta watched him turn, and caught his eye as he glanced one last time over his shoulder. She gave him an exasperated wave to move him on, and the laugh that echoed back settled in her like a sip of warm tea. She looked around again, struggling up onto her feet. The wall behind was enough of a support to lean against as she stepped through the piles of glass and wet, scorched wood. The signs were in English, and by the smell and scene, she could at least guess that there'd been some kind of fire. Etta stepped back to where she'd been before, and tucked herself against the wall, out of sight. Every now and then she heard a voice or the soft growl of an engine, and leaned forward to peer down the long hallway at the streets on either side. A bright red bus rolled by, followed by two young women in skirt suits and little hats pinned in place. Etta was painfully aware of her 18th-century gown and the stays squeezing her ribs. England, she thought, half amazed. London, if she had to guess. And the fashion. 1950s? Or... No. She took in the demolished walls, the evidence of the fire, the uniformed men passing by the opposite end of the hallway. Wartime London. World War II. Nicholas confirmed it when he returned, with clothing for her tucked beneath his arm. He'd changed into a crisp button-down shirt and trousers, and traded his shoes for Oxfords. She could only imagine how he might have explained the breeches, stockings, and jacket he'd been strolling around in.
I wasn't entirely sure of the size, he began,
his eyes on the ground as he passed a cornflower blue dress and smart matching jacket into her hands. Etta studied the dress, V-neck, modest length, short sleeves, and ran her fingers along the lace detailing she had just noticed. It's beautiful, thank you, she said, and also generously loosened the waist, but it came with a belt that would allow her to tighten it if necessary. How was it out there? Nicholas stared at her as she struggled to blindly unbutton her dress, until Etta, flushing, finally cleared her throat. He startled and spun on his heel, giving her a little bit of privacy, as she got enough of the buttons undone to pull the dress over her head.
Men are working to clear the wreckage from last night's attack. They're searching for survivors still, he said. I overheard them saying they would move to this area soon, so we need to proceed with some haste.
Etta thought so too, but it wasn't helping her get the stays unknotted any faster. Her hands throbbed from where they'd been scraped raw by her fall, and she could not get her fingers to stop shaking. I'm sorry, she muttered. I need help. Nicholas glanced at her, then immediately turned back to face the wall. Etta felt a blush moving up over her face and chest. Stays and a nearly see-through shift. She should have at least crossed her arms over her chest. He took in a pained breath and turned around. She studied the quick, sure movements of his calloused hands as he worked, forcing her arms to stay down at her side until the laces finally gave. His broad shoulders closed out the rest of the world. Nicholas stood close enough that she could have leaned forward, pressed her face against the space between his neck and shoulders. She could have. And, for a moment, she felt she might be trapped in the heavy grip of her own want if she didn't. His pulse fluttered in his neck, and she couldn't take her eyes away from it. There, he murmured, though his fingers lingered on the loose laces a moment longer, his thumbs skimming along the upper edges of the stays, ghosting against the fabric of her shift. Etta felt herself completely still, too afraid to lean forward into the touch, too afraid to move or do anything that might end it. The dizziness was back. She felt the warm breath of his sigh fan against her collarbone, an instant before he stepped away. He kept his gaze down as he said, in a voice like warm honey, "Sailors, good with knots." It wasn't until he turned back around to let her finish that Etta's mind cleared again enough to remember the scissors she'd taken and stowed in her bag, for this exact reason. The dress he'd chosen fit her well enough, but Etta would have to make do with the lace-up leather boots she'd taken from Sophia, and just ignore their pinching until there was a better option. She reached up, touching her earrings to make sure they were still there. "Okay," she said, smoothing her hair back over her shoulder. "How's this look?" As he stared, she reminded herself very firmly that he was staring at the hideously bruised lump jutting out of one side of her face, and only the hideously bruised lump. After a moment, he said, "You'll do, pirate. Now tell me what your mother's letter truly says." As he balled up the gown, rolling the fabric up into a tidier bundle, Etta retrieved the letter and pen that had rolled into the bottom of the bag. Using the wall, she sketched the outline of a star over the face of the letter, studying the flow of words that were contained inside of its shape. Nicholas stepped closer, reading over her shoulder. Around them, the morning was picking up in pace, bursting with voices and the smell of fire and gasoline, but they were tucked inside a quiet pocket, a passage of their own. "Rise and enter the lair where the darkness gives you your stripes. Tell tyrants to you their allegiance they owe," Etta read, running a finger beneath the words within the star. "Seek out the unknown gods whose ears were deaf to lecture. Stand on the shoulders of memory. Bring a coin to the widowed queen. Remember, the truth is in the telling, and an ending must be final." "My God," he said with a hint of delight. "How did you know to do this?" With as little explanation as possible, she told him about the secret messages her mother had hidden in her violin case, and in her suitcase when she traveled. "She wanted you to be able to read it," he said, practically glowing with excitement. "She thought that someday you might have to find the astrolabe. Do you understand any of the clues?" Etta shook her head, scanning the words over and over again, wondering if she'd been wrong, if it was meant to be another shape. The words didn't make any sense. "If we assume this is a list of instructions, directions, then I believe we can ignore the first clue," Nicholas said, taking the letter from her. "The second, 'Tell tyrants to you their allegiance they owe,' refers to the place where Nathan Hale was killed, the passage we came through, meaning the next one is likely relevant to us now. Seek out the unknown gods whose ears were deaf to lecture. Does that stir anything in your memory?" Helplessness tugged at her as she shook her head, and she felt her hopes start to fray. How were they going to figure out multiple clues like this in 7 days? "What do unknown gods have to do with London during the Second World War? Are they people? A certain faith?" The last clue tied the location of the passage to one man's death. and the clue had used a song that her great-grandfather was fond of belting out now and again. Would this one relate to her family in a similar way, be as personal? Something nagged at her as she thought back to the Dove, the artillery park. But she brushed it aside as Nicholas said,
"Lecture. Lecture, lecture, lecture."
He spun toward her so quickly he almost knocked her back a step. His eyes lit up, making the planes of his face seem almost boyish.
"Is it possible it's referring to St. Paul's Areopagus sermon?"
Etta returned his eager expression with a blank one.
"Heathen," Nicholas teased. "Acts 17:16-34, the Apostle Paul gave a sermon, a lecture in fact, as it was against Greek law to preach about a foreign deity, in Athens, at the Areopagus.
I'll take your word for it." He chuckled, absently brushing a feather-light finger along her chin. He didn't seem to realize he'd done it, but every inch of Etta's skin was sparkling with awareness.
"The Areopagus is the rocky area below the Acropolis. It served as the city's high court of appeals in ancient times," he explained,
and Etta felt both impressed at his knowledge and terribly inadequate in the face of it.
"I've read of it. Captain Hall saw himself as a philosopher as much as a seaman. He was educated at Harvard, if you can believe it, and kept any number of treatises around in the hope that Chase or I would stumble upon them one day. And Mrs. Hall was rather stringent in our biblical education."
"I wish I could say the same," Etta muttered. The only service she'd attended inside of a church had been the funeral of Oscar, Alice's husband. Considering the role of religion in the 18th century, the depth of Nicholas's knowledge shouldn't have surprised her. She found herself leaning toward him, something sparking and warming at the center of her chest, as she reappraised him in light of this. For the first time, Etta was truly grateful he had followed her through the passage.
"The sermon is something to the effect of, 'Ye men of Athens, I perceive that in all things ye are too superstitious. For as I passed by and beheld your devotions, I found an altar with this inscription, To the Unknown God.' The sermon was centered on his distress at seeing the Athenians worshipping false idols, the Greek pantheon of gods."
"And the connection between London and ancient Greece is," Etta prompted, hoping he'd have the answer, since she didn't.
"Architecture, laws, statues, and art," he offered. "I'd imagine that it's a place or thing you have a personal connection with. Have you visited this city before?"
Etta nodded, any number of times. She, her mom, and Alice had flown back to visit, spent summers in rented flats to escape the sweltering heat of New York. Alice had grown up in London, and, well, she'd always been told her mother had as well, though that seemed up for debate now. The truth and fiction in her stories had started to bleed together, damaging them like a waterlogged painting. During their holidays, they'd rented any number of flats, but remembering them now, none of them stood out from the others. They'd walked all over the city, visiting the parks, the house Alice had grown up in. They'd gone to the theater, museums.
"Oh," she said.
It felt like the thought reached up and slapped her in the face. She turned to Nicholas, almost giddy that she could finally explain something he might not know.
"This idea is crazy, but London, the British Museum, has a ton of artifacts from ancient Greece, doesn't it? The most famous set were removed, or looted, depending on who you're talking to, from the Parthenon by a British lord, Elgin, who brought them back here and sold them to the British government for the museum. It's a whole legal mess."
Etta rocked back onto her heels, looking up at the clouds and smoke trailing overhead. "I might be reaching here, but the Acropolis and the Parthenon are so close to the Areopagus it feels like they're linked. It's been a while since I visited that room of the museum, and I can't exactly remember what the Elgin marbles depict. Some kind of battle, I think. But there are statues of men and women."
"Go on," Nicholas urged.
"I was trying to figure out the deaf ears part, thinking of real, living people. But what if it's talking about the statues themselves? They can't hear or see or feel."
"Do you recall ever hearing any strange noises while in their proximity?" he asked her.
She shook her head.
"Based on the way your mother used the clue about Nathan Hale's execution, it's likely the passage is in the museum, near where those statues are housed. The British Museum of my time is quite likely different than the one you know. I've never been granted access to it, nor was I ever given the full record of where all of the known passages are located. I'm a bit lost as to what to suggest.
Frustration pooled in the pit of her stomach, rising with each passing moment. Nicholas watched her, waiting.
I don't know. Are we overthinking this? Should it be something simpler, more obvious?
He stooped slightly to look her in the eye. It's all right. Perhaps it would help to think aloud. Anything, however small, might help us.
She nodded. He could help her clarify her thoughts, and might catch something buried in the words. Mom works for a museum, but in New York. There's been a lot of renewed debate recently about whether or not the Elgin marbles should be returned to Greece. It's been all over the press. The British Museum is just the British Museum, you know. Or, well, I guess you don't. Yet. But Alice used to give us her own special tours. Her father was a curator. She told me the whole story about how they came to be in the museum's collection.
Alice, your instructor, he clarified.
Her throat was suddenly too tight to speak. Nicholas merely nodded again, as if he'd somehow put all the pieces together.
With a small, tentative smile, he asked, "Shall we go, then?"
With the image of Alice still too close to the front of her mind, and exhaustion stretching every emotion, Etta didn't trust her voice. She nodded, accepting his arm when he offered it. It didn't even occur to her that her hands were cold until she placed one into his. Despite everything, Etta felt anticipation fizzing through her veins, prickling across her nerves. The scene around them sank through her, became real. Nicholas gave her a knowing look.
"It's just unbelievable that we're here," she told him. "All of this..."
It was beautiful and strange and unnatural, and she couldn't help it. She wanted to explore what was around her, to see it for herself, the world unfolding as it was, not the edited versions presented in films and books.
"Under other, less dire circumstances," he said, "might you be glad to see this?"
It felt like a betrayal to her anger at the Ironwoods to give the yes that was in her heart, even with the way he'd couched the question.
"I don't know. Let's see how we do, and then I'll answer that.
Let's see if I can find the astrolabe and my mother, and set my life straight again."
Nicholas slung the leather bag over his shoulder, letting it slap against his hip as they navigated the maze of debris. He stopped suddenly, craning his neck around. Etta followed his gaze to where gold letters gleamed high above the entrance archway. The contrast between them and the battered ruins of the structure made the hair rise on the back of her arms.
"Burlington Arcade," he read.
She knew this place. She'd been here once, years ago, for a performance. Alice had walked her through the long enclosed shopping center with all of its glittering stores. They'd found Christmas presents for Rose.
"I think I know where we are," she said.
"Roughly." Rough was a good way to describe what they saw as they stepped out of the ruined arcade and onto the street. She'd known to expect destruction. She'd seen pictures, heard Alice and Oscar describe it with a raw pain that lingered decades later. What Etta hadn't expected was that so many Londoners would be out and about in suits, dresses, and heels, carefully picking their way through the piles of debris that had blown out of storefronts, deftly avoiding the craters that had collapsed in whole sections, the surface of the street torn away to reveal the pipes beneath. Clouds passed over the sun, spotting the ground with shadows. Etta watched Nicholas as they made their way down a succession of connecting streets, heading east. He was drifting to the left, pulling away, until her hand slipped off his sleeve. The nausea and wooziness from the traveler's sickness had passed, but she felt disoriented all over again, in a very different way. Though Nicholas stayed only a step ahead of her, she felt the distance between them build until she felt suddenly alone. Every now and then Nicholas caught sight of something new. A bicycle, a window display, a police officer in uniform, a traffic light. And it would drag his attention away. Etta could tell he didn't want to have to ask her to explain. There was some part of him that was enjoying the process of figuring it out himself. But he was curious.
"Have you been here before?" she asked finally.
here, here. He shook his head, answering quietly.
I only went as far as 1925, and that was in New Orleans.
Compared to the quiet of the 18th century, 20th century London practically roared around them. A car beeped and sped past them, and Etta felt a hand clamp over her wrist. Nicholas flew back against the nearby shop, and Etta stumbled after him. The nearby shopkeeper was writing business as usual on a piece of wood in the shattered front window of his store, and looked up at the sudden movement in alarm. Etta sent the man a reassuring smile before turning back to the man next to her. The breath tore in and out of Nicholas, his nostrils flaring as the car rolled to a rattling stop nearby. After a moment, he explained,
"There. Louder than I recall. Faster."
She nodded. "They probably are."
"And," Nicholas said, his voice lowering as he looked down at her, "you have them in your time as well."
"Yeah, even better ones. Faster, quieter. They use less energy. Some have built-in navigational systems."
"Okay, too much detail."
His eyes had widened at the words less energy, and she knew she'd lost him. "Everything changes when given enough time." He worked his jaw back and forth.
"Everything."
It might have been the way he was studying her mouth, or how his hands seemed to be lightly tracing the folds of her dress's skirt, without even being fully aware of it. But the tickle of confusion roared into a jagged, painful understanding.
"Oh," she thought, throat thick.
"Oh."
"Do you want me to tell you?" she asked him. "Do you really want to know what my time is like?"
If he did plan on returning home and never traveling again, he would never benefit from any progress, never see it for himself. It would drive anyone crazy, knowing what was out of reach of his natural lifetime. Finally, Nicholas shook his head.
"I'd rather discover it for myself."
She could protect him in the meantime, at least.
"You covered for me on the ship. The least I can do is return the favor now, the best I can."
His smile turned rueful.
"This partner's business is a rather novel concept for me, but I appreciate that."
Etta wanted to ask him about Julian, but she also couldn't let him drift away into a pool of terrible memories. She stepped back out onto what little was left of the sidewalk, cupping her hands over her eyes to shade them from the sunlight. "Well, I officially have no idea where we are." His jaw actually dropped.
"Did I not say we needed a map?"
She wasn't about to let him win that argument. "Hold on. Just a second."
"Hold on to what?"
he called after Etta as she walked away. The shopkeeper she'd seen a moment before had ducked back into his store, and was now sweeping out the powdery dust and ash that had blown in from the street. She leaned in through the doorway. "Hello," she said. "I'm sorry to bother you, but I'm wondering if you could help me." The man leaned against the handle of his broom, the severe features of his face softening as he returned her smile. Behind him was a long wooden counter, with shelf upon shelf of dark bottles marked with paper labels. Some kind of pharmacy.
"An American," he ventured. "Not the best time for a visit, I'm afraid, unless you're the first in a new wave of defenses. Are the Yanks finally jumping in?"
Probably he was joking, but there was a tremor in his voice as he said it, a vulnerability peering through the business-as-usual facade. "Not yet," she said, trying to keep her voice cheerful. "I think it'll be a while." And only after we're directly attacked. But she couldn't tell him that. Etta felt it then for the first time, the fragility of the past. It was an eerie sensation to be in this shop, with its thousands of glass objects packed in so closely around her, and know that one slight misstep on her part could send them smashing to the ground. Etta doubted that telling this stranger about America's entry into the war, if she presented it as a guess, would be enough to change anything in the timeline. But she wasn't willing to bet that one small change wouldn't send the future she'd known crashing down around her, shattered. The man knelt to sweep the dust into a bin.
"A waiting game, I expect. What can I help you with?"
Out of the corner of her eye, she saw Nicholas watching through the blown-out window frame. "I'm wondering if you could point me in the direction of the British Museum." His gray brows rose.
"All you've got to do is continue east on this road,"
Make a left on Dean Street and a right onto Oxford Street, which will turn into Great Russell Street for you. Doing a bit of sightseeing, then?
Yes. I just wasn't sure if I was headed the right way. Thank you so much. You've been a great help.
She had already turned to the door when the man let out a faint laugh.
Miss. Come back, miss. I should have told you straight away. Can't resist a bit of teasing now and then, especially in times like these.
Uh-oh. That tiny bit of excitement was instantly scrubbed out.
You can go to the museum, but I'm afraid there'll be nothing to see, he said. They took out everything valuable last summer, and it's been closed ever since.
The British Museum was closed. She should have believed the shopkeeper, but it seemed impossible that they could have come all the way only to be met with locked, towering black gates. The somber stone building, with columns and reliefs inspired by ancient times, seemed to fade away the longer they stood there. It taunted them. And just to put the last nail in the coffin of possibility, Etta took the harmonica out of the bag at Nicholas's side, the harmonica she'd stolen out of Sophia's trunk, seemingly identical to the one Cyrus had used to find the passage in New York, and blew a quick, hard burst of air into it. She strained her ears, trying to lean through the bars of the gate, like that could somehow help her hear a sound that wasn't there.
Nothing, Nicholas said.
Nothing, she agreed, placing the instrument back in the bag and cinching it shut with more force than was probably necessary. Even if the statues themselves were removed, I think I was still hoping the passage would be with them.
Perhaps we underestimated your mother, he said. I can't imagine she would have made it so easy for anyone to find.
A world war isn't enough of a hurdle? Etta asked, rubbing her hand over her face. Okay, okay. We just have to think this through.
I do have an idea, but I'm afraid it's terrible, Nicholas said, surveying the lock on the gate and giving it another hard tug.
A bad idea is better than no idea, Etta said.
I'm glad you feel that way, because this is an exquisitely bad one.
He turned to her.
We can go around the back of the museum, and I can lift you over the gate. You can then slip into the museum and hold any guards or curators inside hostage, until they give up the information about the location of the statues.
Hold them hostage, she repeated.
Don't you know? That's how real pirates like Blackbeard made most of their money. He ransomed whole cities, he said. I'll even teach you how to use the revolver.
Despite herself, Etta smiled. I really appreciate the faith you have in my criminal abilities. But even if I find someone in there, I doubt they'll be good for anything other than calling the police to pick me up. It seems like the kind of information people would do anything to protect. He leaned against one of the black bars.
Would they really have taken out a whole hoard of valuable items?
She gestured to the streets around them, the pockets of rubble, the burned-out husks of buildings that were missing entire sections. If they thought there was a chance that they might be destroyed or looted, then yes. I know you said you don't really want to know about these things, but Germany invades France and occupies Paris for most of the war. France does the same thing with the paintings and sculptures at the Louvre. The curators and volunteers bring them out to different hiding spots in the countryside, which saves them in the end.
When I first learned of this war, I believed Julian was trying to make a joke of me, he admitted.
She nodded. Well, it's a good thing the museum thought ahead. One bomb and thousands of years of art and culture could have been lost. The humming buzz overhead drew their gaze. Two planes, fighter planes by the looks of them, made a pass, their long shadows sweeping over them. Nicholas stiffened beside her, and before she could ask what was wrong, he was already chasing them down the sidewalk, his gaze fixed on them with a wonder that made Etta's chest ache. She stayed close on his heels, drinking in his wide eyes, the faint smile, until finally the planes disappeared into the horizon.
Flying, Nicholas muttered under his breath, as if still in disbelief. It shouldn't surprise me that men continue to think of grand new ways to kill one another, and with greater precision, but
he shook his head.
If we take this to mean the statues aren't here, is it worth finding them? Or is it a matter of taking another look at the clue and coming up with a better guess?
I felt so good about this, Etta said, sounding as stubborn as she felt. I think we're on the right track. This is just a little setback. We'll figure it out.
Nicholas snorted.
Little.
Etta turned back, studying the spread of steps